Hello and Happy New Year. This is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, January 2nd, 2026. We turn first to page one where the main story is about the environment titled Winter a Time to Help Birds. Expert says offering shelter, food, and water help survival. This story is Dateline Bloomington. Winter can be a tough time for everyone, not just humans. From a naturalist point of view, in winter, what we want to do is help the birds survive, said Deanna Frouchy, master naturalist, philanthropist, and McLean County history maker. There are three basic things that birds need during the darker months that most everyone can help out with: shelter, water, and food. Shelter can look like anything from birdhouses to natural yard shrubbery, she said. Some people take their old Christmas tree, if it had been a live tree, and they'll stick that out, she said, and that's a place for birds and small critters. Water is a little more complicated and requires either warmer temperatures or a heated water bath, which Frouchy uses. Like all living things, birds need water to drink, and while they can get it by melting snow in their mouths, that lowers the bird's body temperature considerably, Frouchy said. The other reason is to clean their flight feathers. If it gets into the 20s or 30s in temperature, they'll go into the bird bath at least partially to preen their feathers, she said. They don't need water to clean themselves, but the water helps them, especially if there's anything stuck on the feathers or something like that, Frouchy said. And food may be the most important of all, because calories are harder to come by this time of year. The main natural food resources for them are in late summer and fall, Frouchy said. After that, they're gone, and a lot of times they're gone through spring. To that end, she recommends peanut feeders specifically designed for birds and outdoor critters, not the salted or sweetened ones for human consumption. And if you're feeling festive, though, you could always make a bird feeder ornament, too. For the past 15 years or so, Frouchy has been showing her friends and anyone interested how to make these using bird suet, unsalted sunflower seeds, crunchy peanut butter, and open weave ball ornaments. The birds cling onto these and peck out the inside, she said. The ornaments are a fun, festive way to get involved, but it's what people are providing our feathered friends that matters, Frouchy said. From my standpoint as a master naturalist, okay, that's fun and might get you engaged, she said. But what I want you to learn is the importance of providing additional food for the bird in the winter, the importance of water, and the importance of shelter. And there is a small sidebar that accompanies this story, along with some beautiful pictures of birds at bird feeders. And this is a bird feeder ornament recipe, which makes about 2 cups of mix. Take 1 cake suet, softened slightly in the microwave, 1/2 cup sunflower seeds, unsalted, 1/2 cup crunchy peanut butter, unsweetened, and pack into open weave balls and hang from tree limbs or a bird feeder pole. And our next front page story is about the White House, headlined Trump Touts His Energy and Health. Interview includes details on screening. This is an Associated Press story, Dateline Washington. President Donald Trump defended his energy and health in an interview with the Wall Street Journal and disclosed that he had a CT scan, not an MRI scan, during an October examination about which he and the White House delayed offering details. Trump, in the interview, said he regretted undergoing the advanced imaging on his heart and abdomen during an October visit to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center because it raised public questions about his health. His physician said in a memo the White House released in December that he had advanced imaging as a preventative screening for men his age. Trump initially described it as an MRI, but said he did not know what part of his body he had scanned. A CT scan is a quicker form of diagnostic imaging than an MRI, but offers less detail about differences in tissue. The president's doctor, Navy Captain Sean Barbabella, said in a statement released Thursday by the White House that Trump underwent the exam in October because he planned to be at Walter Reed to meet people working there. Trump already underwent an annual physical in April. President Trump agreed to meet with the staff and soldiers at Walter Reed Medical Hospital in October. In order to make the most of the president's time at the hospital, we recommended he undergo another routine physical evaluation to ensure continued optimal health, Barbabella said. Barbabella said he asked the president to undergo either a CT scan or an MRI to definitively rule out any cardiovascular issues, and the results were perfectly normal and revealed absolutely no abnormalities. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said in a statement Thursday that the president's doctors and the White House always maintained the president received advanced imaging, but said additional details on the imaging have been disclosed by the president himself because he has nothing to hide. In retrospect, it's too bad I took it because it gave them a little ammunition, Trump said in the interview with the Wall Street Journal, published Thursday. I would have been a lot better off if they didn't, because the fact that I took it said, oh gee, is something wrong? Well, nothing is wrong. The 79-year-old became the oldest person to take the oath of office when he was sworn in as president last year and has been sensitive to questions about his health, particularly as he repeatedly questioned his predecessor Joe Biden's fitness for office. Biden, who turned 82 in the last year of his presidency, was dogged to the end of his tenure and during his abandoned attempt to seek re-election over scrutiny about his age and mental acuity. But questions also swirled around Trump's health this year as he has been seen with bruising on the back of his right hand that was conspicuous despite makeup on top, along with noticeable swelling at his ankles. The White House this summer said the president was diagnosed with chronic venous insufficiency, a common condition among older adults. The condition happens when veins in the legs cannot properly carry blood back to the heart and it pools in the lower legs. In the interview, Trump said he briefly tried wearing compression socks to address the swelling, but stopped because he did not like them. The bruising on Trump's hand, according to Leavitt, is from frequent handshaking and the use of aspirin, which Trump takes regularly to reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke. He said he takes more aspirin than his doctors recommend, but he resisted taking less because he's been taking it for 25 years and is a little superstitious. Trump takes 325 milligrams of aspirin daily, according to Barbabella. They say aspirin is good for thinning out the blood, and I don't want thick blood pouring through my heart, Trump said. I want nice, thin blood pouring through my heart. Does that make sense? Trump, in the interview, denied he fell asleep during White House meetings when cameras caught him with his eyes closed, instead insisting that he was resting his eyes or blinking. I'll just close. It's very relaxing to me, he said. Sometimes they'll take a picture of me blinking, and they'll catch me with the blink. He said he has never slept much at night, a habit he also described during his first term, and starts his day early in the White House residence before moving to the Oval Office about 10 a.m. and working until 7 or 8 p.m. The president dismissed questions about his hearing, saying he only struggled to hear when there's a lot of people talking, and said he has plenty of energy, which he credited to his genes. Genetics are very important, he said, and I have very good genetics. Our next front page story is about McLean County, headlined Audit Delay Costly for County, Fees and Lost Interest, Stalled Grants, Part of the 4-month Wait. This story is Dateline Bloomington. Tens of thousands of dollars in penalties and overdue billing, the loss of potentially hundreds of thousands in collected interest, and the withholding of millions in property tax revenue were some of the consequences McLean County faced for failing to submit its 2024 audit to the Illinois Comptroller's Office on time. While the county staff scrambled to collect the necessary data to complete the audit, several county commissions and committees reported delayed payments to vendors, and the county was eventually placed on a stop payment list that left them temporarily ineligible to receive grant funding from the state. Under Illinois law, counties have 180 days after the close of a given fiscal year to submit their annual audits. However, McLean County was one of 19 counties across the state to miss that deadline for the 2024 audit. For McLean County, the audit was due in June 2025. Leading up to the June deadline, representatives of Clifton Larson Allen, the county's external auditing firm, notified staff that several materials necessary to complete the audit were still missing, and some reports were not expected to be completed until mid-July. The McLean County Board had to call a special meeting on October 21st to finally approve the audit. One of the primary factors staff blamed for the four-month delay was a lack of communication with the McLean County Auditor's Office. Although there were no significant inaccuracies in McLean County's audit and no county operations were halted, staff members have said they are hoping weekly correspondence and new software designed to expedite financial filings will prevent similar delays from happening again. McLean County Auditor Michelle Anderson, who has served as auditor for the last 16 years, could not be reached for comment on this story. McLean County was granted a 60-day extension to complete its 2024 audit, but missed this deadline at the end of August. As a result, the Illinois Comptroller's Office withheld two property tax distributions totaling $18.7 million until the audit was submitted. The delay forced the county board to move money around to meet lease and maintenance obligations for facilities owned by the Public Building Commission. Jeff Lord, a retired National Bank examiner and candidate for the McLean County Board's 5th District, spoke during October's regular meeting of the county board to say frozen property tax dollars leave the county unable to invest this revenue or collect interest on it. This cannot be made up, and those dollars are left on the table, Lord said. McLean County Administrator Cassie Taylor said she thinks the amount of interest loss from the period of frozen property revenue could be fairly substantial, and a loss of at least $100,000 could be within the ballpark. I did try to receive a ballpark figure from our treasurer on what she thought would have been accrued revenue during that time frame, and she was not comfortable giving me a specific number, Taylor said. McLean County Treasurer Rebecca McNeil said during December's Finance Committee meeting that from the start of the 2025 fiscal year through the month of October, the county invested about $127.4 million across all funds, and the amount of interest accrued from these investments was about $3.5 million. Art Rodriguez, chair of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission, said that a year ago it would not take long for the county auditor's office to sign off on a $2,700 voucher to ensure local veterans had access to defibrillators. But during the delinquency period of the 2024 audit, the commission was now being asked to provide meeting minutes for its voucher requests, which Rodriguez said could significantly delay payments and could be seen as an act of retaliation in response to his persistent request to sign off on payments. We are going to be looking at delaying payments that may be urgent by a month, he said. Under the Military Veterans Assistance Act, Rodriguez said the commission is entitled to 2 cents of every $100 of assessed value of real estate in the county. This typically amounts to be about $1.5 million a year. But thanks to community partnerships with the YWCA, Project Oz, and others, Rodriguez said the commission usually operates with about $700,000. We have a more solid base with our community partners so that can reduce our demand on money, he said. This money has helped to pay for a trailer for a Vietnam War veteran to transport electronic wheelchairs and scooters to disabled veterans and other individuals with physical disabilities free of charge. It also provides for the Hua Deer Hunt for Heroes, an annual event that gives soldiers the chance to network with each other through a hunting and fishing trip. However, both of these programs experience significant payment delays, Rodriguez said. Sometimes the funds just cover the rent and utilities of veterans in need or the addition of a walk-in shower for a veteran with cancer. There are needs out there, particularly in the rural areas, and the needs are pretty critical, he said. Rodriguez called for Anderson's resignation ahead of the board's approval of the 2024 audit. McLean County Board Member Corey Burns said during November's board meeting that many departments, including the health department, continue to experience delayed payments to vendors due to the poor performance of the auditor. Aspects of these delays have shown in quarterly budget reports, which have displayed inaccurate amounts, he said. This has been pretty universal across the county, unfortunately. Established in 2015, the Illinois Stop Payment List is a database of eligible grant recipients facing temporary or permanent payment holds due to non-compliance with state requirements, including failure to submit annual audit reports on time. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity put the county on a stop payment status on October 22 because of the delayed audit. Although the audit was certified and submitted by that date, a management decision letter, which formally addressed the findings and recommendations of a financial or compliance and audit, had not been completed. That restricted our ability to submit grants, to draw down any funds from our existing grants, or to submit any updates to those grants, Taylor said. It was about a month that we were on that status, and then we were able to get that cleared up. She added that the status does not impact county operations long-term, but frequent placements could cause harm. Clifton Larson Allen billed tens of thousands of dollars to the county for additional audit work during the four-month delinquency period. According to billing invoices obtained by the Pantograph through the Freedom of Information Act, Clifton Larson Allen billed $11,500 to the county for auditing services just in the month of September. The Comptroller's Office also has the authority to assess fines for filing late audits, $5 per day for the first 15 days of delinquency, $10 per day for the next 16 to 30 days, $15 per day for the next 31 to 45 days, and $20 per day if the audit is delinquent longer than 45 days. No fines were assessed to McLean County for 2024, but if the extension had not been approved, the county would have owed more than $1,800 in fees by the time it was put on the Illinois Stop Payment List. Dong Kim, an analyst for NIHART, an Indianapolis-based consultant that performs actuarial services for McLean County audits, had sent multiple unanswered emails to Anderson dating back to November 2024 about starting audit procedures. Clifton Larson Allen also alerted the county in May of outstanding items needed to finish the audit and of the firm's inability to reach Anderson by phone or email. County staff is hoping to avoid this kind of breakdown in communication in the future by setting up weekly meetings with Clifton Larson Allen, the auditor, and the treasurer, Taylor said. I think that is going to make the most impact on this, is that we start these conversations maybe in March to see where we're at with submissions to our outside auditors so that we make sure that we are not, off track at that point, and then the rest should fall in line, she said. The county's Enterprise Resource Planning, or ERP, software is one tool expected to help with future audits, the administrator said. She described it as a major software upgrade that manages all of the county's financials, including budgets, projects, payroll, financial reports, and grant management. So instead of having to do back and forth through emails with departments that were keeping spreadsheets for different grants, All of that will already be encompassed in our ERP software, Taylor said. There will also be a direct upload option so various departments can submit requisition or purchase orders instead of waiting for finance departments to start the process. And our last front page story is about local media titled Pantograph Owner Lee in $50 Million Sale. This is a story from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. David Hoffman, the Florida-based billionaire and Missouri native, is leading a $50 million deal with the owner of the Pantograph newspaper to buy a controlling stake in the chain and become its chairman. The deal, announced Tuesday, shakes up leadership and offers debt relief for regional newspaper owner Lee Enterprises, which has recorded heavy losses amid the industry's struggles to retain subscribers and advertisers as news outlets shift from print to digital. As part of the deal, Lee CEO Kevin Mowbray is resigning with a $1.5 million payout. Chief Operating Officer Nathan Becky will take over as interim CEO. Lee's primary lender, Berkshire Hathaway Finance, has agreed to cut the interest rate for 5 years on the newspaper chain's roughly $450 million in debt from 9% to 5%, saving as much as $18 million a year in interest payments. This transaction reflects the board's determination to act decisively, Mary Junk, who for years has been on the chair of Lee's board, said in a statement. By strengthening the balance sheet and improving the company's capital structure, we are putting the company in a better position to execute and create long-term value. Lee Enterprises, the Davenport, Iowa owner of the Pantograph, Herald and Review, Journal Gazette, and Times Courier, and publications in 70 markets, announced that it had reached an agreement with Hoffman and other investors to sell them nearly 15.4 million shares at $3.25 per share. The deal would make Hoffman the lead investor and is expected to make him chairman of the board, Lee said in a security filing. The company had about 6.3 million shares outstanding as of the end of October. Hoffman has committed to buying up to $35 million in shares, while other investors committed up to $15 million. A Hoffman affiliate already owned about 10% of Lee's shares. Quint Digital Limited, an Indian firm and another major Lee shareholder, said it is joining the deal with an $8 million investment, boosting its stake in the company to almost 15%. Lee said it will hold a shareholder meeting to obtain approval for both the deal and get authorization to increase the number of shares that it can issue to 40 million from 12 million. And the deal is expected to close in the first quarter. Hoffman has for more than a year expressed an interest in Lee and local news. Lee initially rebuffed his offers, inserting a poison pill to keep investors like him from gaining control of the company as Hoffman grew his stake in the company to around 10%. But Lee found itself without other options after it abruptly canceled a shareholder meeting in December to issue additional stock to raise capital. Markets cheered the news in early trading. Lee's stock was up 20% to $4.50 in Tuesday trading. This transaction strengthens the company's balance sheet and reflects the board's determination to take decisive action, David Hoffman said in a statement from Lee. With improved financial stability and a clear governance framework in place, the focus can now be on disciplined execution and long-term value creation. Hoffman founded the Hoffman Family of Companies, which owns commercial real estate and businesses such as Oberweis Dairy. The company made headlines buying properties and businesses in St. Charles County, Wine Country, and in Franklin County. This month, the company announced the purchase of the NHL's Pittsburgh Penguins. Mowbray led Lee for the last 10 years, taking over in 2016 after Junk stepped down as CEO but remained board chair. Jung served as CEO for 15 years. During that time, she oversaw Lee's acquisition of Pulitzer Inc., then the publisher of the Pantograph, and about a dozen other daily newspapers in 2005. Lee paid $1.5 billion, much of it financed by debt, for Pulitzer. The last year has been particularly rough for Lee. In February, a cyber attack upended operations and disrupted delivery at several of its newspapers. It deferred several months of $3.7 million interest payments to Berkshire Hathaway in order to raise enough capital to recover. And its stock has fallen more than 70% since January, down from over $14 per share. In the wake of the attack, Hoffman expressed interest in buying Lee. Hoffman has said he is a believer in local news, telling the New York Times last year that print newspapers are a key part of the American fabric. These local newspapers are really important to these communities, Hoffman told the Times. With the digital age and technology, it's changing rapidly, but I think there's room for both, and we would like to be a part of that. And we turn now to some local and state news. Carl limits visitors as viruses spread. This story is Dateline Normal. As all Carl Health Service areas throughout central and southeastern Illinois face increasing rates of respiratory illnesses, the hospital system is taking temporary precautions to stop the spread. The guidelines include limiting patient rooms to 2 visitors at a time who are 18 or older, and encouraging anyone experiencing respiratory symptoms to wear a mask while in the facilities. These guidelines have been implemented at all Carl hospitals, including Carl Broman in Normal, Carl Eureka, Carl Foundation in Urbana, and Carl Methodist and Proctor in Peoria. The precautions are in line with the comprehensive viral respiratory prevention and control recommendations from the Illinois Department of Public Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Carl Health continually monitors the rate of RSV, flu, COVID-19, and other infections in the areas we serve, and have seen a steady incline over the past weeks, said Robert Healy, Chief Associate Medical Director for Quality Patient Safety and Patient Experience, in a statement. Based on this data and the recommendations of IDPH and CDC, taking additional temporary precautions in our care facilities is necessary to reduce the spread of illness. According to a news release, lowering the number of interactions between community members with temporary visitor restrictions has helped patients recover quickly and reduce the number of people who contract infections. Carl Health experts will continue to evaluate respiratory illness rates and provide an update when levels reach a point where the temporary restrictions can be lifted. The health system also encourages residents to stay mindful during the season by maintaining good hygiene, wearing a mask when experiencing symptoms, staying home when feeling ill, and staying up to date on vaccines. And you can visit carl.org for more information about visitor guidelines at Carl Health facilities. And here are some calendar items. Pet Central Helps and PetSmart Adoption Event, January 3rd and 4th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at PetSmart on East Empire Street in Bloomington. Come see Pet Central Helps every weekend at PetSmart in Bloomington with a large variety of available pets. And there is a Glory Way concert at 6 p.m. January 4th at Cross Point Church of God on Airport Road in Bloomington, free with a love offering. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, January 2nd, 2026. I look forward to reading part two with you next.